Hello and welcome to the Hornets and Heartbreak podcast. My name is Mark Bernacki and I'm here with my co-host, Tim Rogers. What's up, Tim?
What it do, Liquor Mark?
I'm doing pretty terrible, man. The Hornets got waxed by the Hawks in the play-in game, 132-103. The game was like relatively close at halftime. We're only down by 8. And then the Hawks surged in the third quarter, outscoring us 42-24, and they never looked back. The defense in that third quarter was atrocious. Back-to-back years, Tim, of the Hornets getting blown out in the play-in game. It felt like this year was going to be different, but it was the exact same story. We named the podcast Hornets and Heartbreak. And, you know, at times the heartbreak part doesn't make sense, but it always comes back around, Tim. It always comes back around, and the name makes sense at the end of the year. Heartbreaking loss, very, very depressing. I've been a little bit of a mess these past 2 days as a result, Tim. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I have to say, I kind of just expected us to win, which was stupid. Like, I'm a cynical person. Like, I should have known better. But yeah, I woke up yesterday and it's almost like, you know, when you go through like a tough breakup and like the first thing you think about in the morning is, like, oh, what's going on with whatever your ex's name is? And then you get like that pang. And that was realizing I was not going to get to watch LaMelo Ball and Miles Bridges for the rest of the season.
That's right. Dude, we got to wait 6 months again to watch them play again. But yeah, our play in that game was just terrible. The Hornets' lack of a good big man was extremely evident. I tweeted out, I only had one tweet during the game, but I tweeted out, like, wild idea here. Really, really creative, like, new idea. The Hornets need a center. We need a center. We had no defense in the paint. DeAndre Hunter, like, killed us in the third quarter. Combine that with bad shooting from Terry Rozier and LaMelo Ball. They both shot 15 for 47. And you get a 29-point loss. The Hawks were just, like, you know, they played in the playoffs last year, and it was evident that they had playoff experience, and we did not. We just were not playing our normal basketball. Bad defense, and then combine that with, like, a lot of isolation on offense and a lot of people just trying to do it themselves. And it just didn't work. Terry started 0 for 7, then started playing better. But, pretty much it's everybody's fault in that game. I don't think anybody outside of, like, P.J. Washington played particularly well.
I think that's the perfect way to put it. We joked last episode, well, nothing could be worse than the Pacers game from last year. Oh, man, getting demolished by Doug McDermott. That's so terrible. And then DeAndre Hunter in the third quarter, like 12 points in the first 6 minutes. And you're just like, oh, wow, that's how this is going to go. Yep. And it was just kind of a little bit of like a stab in the back, because we had been like, we played our best basketball over the last 15 games. Like, so I was like, okay, maybe momentum will carry forward as possible. And we kind of just laid down and died. I mean, they're really, you know, like, people always talk about, oh man, losing a close game is terrible. That really stayed, nothing worse than that. It's like, no, actually ending your season on a 30-point loss, kind of, it will stick with you for the rest of the summer.
Yep. Yeah. Just a bitter taste in your mouth. And I'm sure all the players feel the same way and feel worse. You know, it was such a good end to the season, like you said, and the team was clicking. We got to 43 wins. That's 10 more wins than last season. Overall, it was still an improvement this season, but just, yeah, the end of the season is just terrible. I was at Spectrum Center for the game. In hindsight, a terrible decision. I should have stayed somewhere safe where I could be alone for that 30-point loss. But yeah, I dipped out at the end of the third quarter. I just left. It was a watch party at Spectrum Center, and I couldn't watch the fourth quarter. You know, we're not supposed to be such diehard fans of the team, Tim, but we are diehard fans of the team. We cover the team, but we are very, very invested in this team. You mentioned this before, like, you work your schedule around watching the Hornets, and not being able to watch them anymore the rest of the year is going to suck. We're going to have to find a different team to root for in this playoffs and start talking about the off season. But with that being said, Tim, we're going to have some great off-season content here on Hornets and Heartbreak. We got a lot of stuff to look forward to this off-season.
Yeah, we've started to map out, you know, some episodes. We're going to do some deep dives on Hornet history and among other things. So yeah, we're excited about that. But sad that it has to begin a little earlier than we expected. And my experience watching the game, I was not at Spectrum Center. Actually went and I'm down in Tampa Bay, of all places. Drove through Georgia on the way, said curses the entire time, hoping that Atlanta would lose. But I was watching the play-in with a NBA agnostic. Mm. Doesn't really care for the league one way or the other. And I just told him, I was like, oh, man, you know, this is going to be a great game. You know, worst case scenario, it'll be really exciting, great offense. And midway through the third quarter, my friend that doesn't watch the NBA was like, dude, this team sucks. You're telling me you watch this team every single, like, you know, three times a week. And I didn't have the goal to be like, I actually quit my serving job so that I could make sure to watch every game. I literally I changed my job so that I could be more dedicated to the Hornets. And they did not pay me back whatsoever.
Not this year. We got to look forward to the future. I want to talk a little bit about, like, the impact that this loss might have on the team. So, like, starting to veer in towards the positives, because obviously there's a lot of negatives. And, like, we don't have to harp on it for too long. Terry Rozier said in his exit interview, you know, he felt bad for Miles and LaMelo because he wanted them to get their first taste of the postseason. And I agree with that. Like, it would have been sick to see this team play a playoff series. In the big picture, we were not going to win a playoff series this year. And I do think that there could be a little bit of a positive impact of ending the season in such a heartbreaking loss. Kind of similar to the way we saw last year. Miles Bridges said in his exit interview, I'm going to push myself past exhaustion again this summer so I can come in as a different player again. When other players say stuff like that, I don't necessarily believe them, but I do believe Miles Bridges when he says that. I think he's going to come in even better than this year. He's going to put the work in the offseason. So is LaMelo. I trust these guys to be pissed off about this all summer long and be putting in work and come in better next season.
Yeah, and exactly. It's always kind of a dicey thing, I think, to just bank in internal development with a team like this. But I think Miles has actually, he's done enough work that it doesn't really come off like OJ Mayo bragging about offseason work. Like, wouldn't really believe that one. Mm. But Miles has done it. Just a moment of silence for this year's Hornets. Hopefully, I guess, you know, we're talking about positives. Let's hope that we don't have to watch Mason Plumlee or Kelly Oubre very much next season.
Tim's eyes were closed while he said that, everybody. I just want you guys to get that picture of him saying that with his eyes closed. Looking at the bright side, we said, you know, this is the most exciting Hornets team we've ever had. I still agree with that. Not a good way to end the year, obviously. But we had 23 wins 2 years ago, 33 wins last year, and then 43 wins this year. It's plus 10 every year. That's what Borrego's been, you know, saying in his interviews, you know, to try to add a little positive spin to this season. And it's not just spin. It's definitely true. The team got better. And wild stat, we were the 10 seed when we had 23 wins, 10 seed with 33 wins, and then also 10 seed with 43 wins. So we've been the 10 seed 3 years in a row, despite increasing our win total by 10 each year. Obviously, we had less games in that 2020 season and then only 72 games last year. So it's a little bit skewed by that. But, like, still, the East has just gotten so much better. And in a normal year, 43 wins, you know, we would have just been in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. But this year was a stacked year. Another thing to look forward to, Tim, is that if the Pelicans win tonight, Paul George is out for the Clippers with COVID. If the Pelicans win tonight, we get their pick and we get two first-round draft picks. Get the 15th pick and then, like, probably the 13th pick or the 14th pick, unless we move up in the lottery, 4% chance of that happening. So that is a bright side that we're about to get a couple of assets and probably not getting our first round pick the following year. So this will be our last, like, high draft picks for a while.
Yeah, I believe next year our pick is top 16 protected. That's another thing. Like, you know, that Kupchak trade, that was actually really good. Normally it would go, like, you know, lottery protected, but he negotiated hard, got top 18, top 16, I think even like top 15 the year after, top 14. So, like, not even, you know, just fully, you know, essentially lottery based, but good work there. But what I'm hearing as far as positives go, we keep increasing by 10 wins a season. Mark, by the time we're 30, we're going to be 84-0.
Yeah. We will be, you did some terrible math there.
83-0.
Yeah. 83-0 in 4 years. Not by the time we're 40. In 4 years, we'll be 83-0.
I thought I said by the time we're 30.
Oh. Yeah. No, if we keep going up by 10, we will be 83-0. We'll add an extra game to the NBA season. But yeah, so be pulling for the Pelicans tonight, because that would obviously be huge. And next year it goes to like a lower draft pick in terms of the protection. So like, this is the best possible scenario. If they make the playoffs this year, we get the best possible pick we can get at the 15th pick. And yeah, so be pulling for that. And also be pulling for the Hawks, because if the Cavs were to beat the Hawks tonight, then the Hawks and us would be tied for the 14th pick in the draft. And that would go to a coin toss. It would go to a coin toss in terms of who gets 14th and who gets 13th. Whereas if the Cavs are eliminated, the Cavs get the 14th and we get the 13th pick. So slight move up there, and then slightly better odds moving up in the fourth pick as well for that game.
Yeah, I would say that's a major move. And yeah, as far as the Pelicans pick, I think that, like, you know, it doesn't roll over to a first next year. It's either we get, you know, the 15th pick this year, or we get the 45th pick this season and another second next season after Zion has come back.
So, oh, yeah, is that how it works?
I'm 100% positive.
Okay.
It's either the first round pick this year or 2 second round picks. So yeah, we are heavily invested. You know, always been a big CJ McCollum guy myself. So yeah, so let's root for them very heavily. And, you know, I mean, all things considered, I just think, you know, the play-in game was disappointing. But at the same time, I feel as though, you know, as big Hornet fans, you could kind of see it coming from a mile away. It's like all of our issues came to a head right then. We didn't have Gordon Hayward when it came time in the third quarter to slow things down. Let's just get some productive shots. Mason Plumlee only played 12 minutes because, shockingly, Mason Plumlee is not a playoff player. Montrezl Harrell was not able to weather heavy minutes as well. He's not a playoff level player. LaMelo, while he's been very hot, he's a young guy, ended up going 7 of 25. It's like, you know, we're just a young team, and it kind of all just came to head in the worst time possible.
Yeah. To put some perspective on that, I want fans to remember that we're in the year two of the LaMelo Ball experience. He is 20 years old. When you look at a team like the Hawks, they weren't even close to making the playoffs in Trae Young's second year, right? So in his first year, not close. Second year, not close. We are on a better trajectory than a lot of these teams with young point guards. Even the Grizzlies, Ja Morant, you know, in year two. Oh, actually, year two, he did make the playoffs. Never mind. I was getting my years mixed up a little bit. But yeah, we're on a good trajectory. And I also want to talk about, like, people, the Hornets Twitter is just ridiculous with, like, the amount of people just calling for Borrego to get fired. From, like, a non-local perspective, on a national level, nobody expects Borrego to get fired. Like, I listened to Ryan Russillo's podcast, and he opened with, like, the fact that Hornets fans expect him to get fired. He was just caught off guard by that. Because, like, when you look at what Borrego's done, 23 wins, 33 wins, 43 wins, that objectively is going to give him job security going into this next year. And, like, you can have your qualms with his rotations. I do as well. But let me just tell you, he's not getting fired this year. It's not going to happen. I would bet a lot of money on that. Maybe next season, like, if it's another stall out year, then it's possible. But he's not getting fired this offseason. When he was asked in a post-game press conference after the Hawks game, somebody asked him about his job security, and he, like, stumbled a little bit. He was, like, just not expecting the question at all. He was like, I haven't even thought about that. And I think that he's right. I think that there's just not a chance that he's getting fired this offseason.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I don't even think this is like that happened, but if anything were to happen, like, we would keep Borrego through, like, you know, next season, of course. But also, if we're 30 games into the season and we're 12-18, then you can fire Borrego, and you at least get three good games of fired up players. You're like, oh, we're making a change. Like, he's clearly, like, next year he will be the scapegoat.
Yes.
For whatever happens. But yeah, I mean, this season, you look at it, like, does Frank Vogel, want to come here. He's already got guaranteed money from the Lakers, even though he got fired, still guaranteed. So like, Jordan is kind of notoriously cheap with paying for staff. That's why he employs like half of his family on the staff. So there's almost zero chance that we would just pay Jim Borrego, Jim Borrego.
James Borrego. Yeah.
Big Jim. Yeah. It's a curse. Pretty much a 0% chance we would fire James Borrego and pay him his salary next year to just sit at home.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. It's just not going to happen. Like I agree with a lot of the gripes about rotations and the failures defensively, but yeah, it's just not going to happen. So we can like stop talking about it. Another thing to look forward to, or to, you know, be thinking about this off season, and this is sort of sparked in the past 24 hours, is will Gordon Hayward be on our team next year? You know, we signed him to that 4-year, $120 million contract. And last night, NBC Sports came out with an article. You sent me the headline of rumor Hornets forward Gordon Hayward wants a change of scenery, which was a little bit misleading by NBC Sports because there's no direct report of Gordon Hayward expressing like actual dissatisfaction with this situation. You know, so I think that's just like front offices leaking that with hopes of acquiring him in a trade. But I do think that we're going to be shopping him around this offseason with the Miles Bridges contract coming up and then the PJ Washington contract coming up and then the LaMelo Ball contract coming up after that. We're going to be looking to get off of Gordon Hayward's contract, I think, if not this offseason, then next offseason, with $30 million. I mean, you know, just obviously being way too much. He played 49 games this year out of a possible 83. He's missed both of the ends of the last two seasons. And, you know, that Russell Westbrook trade rumor came up. You've been talking about the Rudy Gobert trade rumor. That's kind of just started by you. That's not actually a rumor.
That's just my brainchild.
Yeah, yeah. That we could trade Gordon Hayward for Rudy Gobert, like Gordon Hayward and a couple picks. So, yeah, be looking for that. We'll see what happens there. We're going to have to wait a couple months, but I would not be surprised if he's not on the team next season.
Yeah, so as far as Gordon Hayward goes, I think the hardest part of moving him will be he has a 15% trade kicker, and at $30 million comes out to about $4.5 million extra, so it's round his salary up to about 34.5 for any incoming team that he would go to, and it's just kind of hard to match that salary with any player. Like, it can't be like Miles Turner. You couldn't really do that. Miles Turner makes about $18 million next season, and we don't really have any open roster spots, which you kind of never hear about in the NBA. Rare thing, but due to all the second round picks and you know, even some of the two first round picks last season, we're kind of tight on roster spots, and we still don't have a center going into next year, a starting quality center. So that's the one real like inhibition with the Gordon Hayward deal. But yeah, I don't, you know, like, I was almost happy to hear that rival GMs, even if they're lying, were leaking information that Gordon Hayward wants to leave, because that means at least one rival GM wants to trade for Gordon Hayward.
Yeah. Yep. So we have like 11 players. I kind of mapped it out that are sort of locked in the next season. Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier, Kelly Oubre, Plumlee, Melo, Miles, PJ, Book Knight, Kai Jones. Jalen McDaniels has a team option for $2 million. Pretty sure we're going to pick that up because that's a good deal. And then JT Thor. So add in two rookies if we get the Pelicans pick. And you can see how the roster spots start to get pretty small here pretty quick. And then you got Cody Martin, Montrezl Harrell, Nick Richards, Isaiah Thomas, all players that we could potentially have on our roster next year. There, you're saying, it is kind of slim in terms of roster spots. I want to bring up that Miles or Mason Plumlee only has $4.5 million of his contract guaranteed next season, non-guaranteed $8.5 million. So if we cut him before, I think it's like June 30th, then we would save $4 million and he would not be on our team next year. I think that might happen. That's another thing to watch out for this offseason. We also, in theory, could do the same thing with Kelly Oubre. I don't think we'll do that. I think he had enough of a contribution this year, even though he was pretty terrible in the last couple months. The first couple months are kind of enough that we're probably going to keep him, but we could, in theory, do the same thing with him. He's $5 million guaranteed. If we released him before that same deadline, I think of June 30th, then we would not have to pay him the full $12 million. And that would open up roster spots, obviously.
Yeah, which, you know, it sounds good. Like, oh, cut Kelly Oubre. But yeah, you actually look at opportunity cost. what are the chances you get a, you know, like a six man style wing with his shooting that will make less than that money? It's pretty much 0% chance.
Yeah. You just take the upside of like potentially Kelly turns it around, which like I would say is less likely than, you know, it is likely that he's going to play like he did in the first half of the season, but there's always the possibility. I mean, he's been good at times. So you just kind of take that and hope for the best. With Plumlee though, I think there's a pretty decent chance that we do actually cut him and save on that $4 million and look for another center in free agency. You mentioned earlier, there's like a massive free agent class for centers and they're kind of all Yeah.
Yeah. Do we want to run through this real quick?
Yeah. Go ahead and pull up the list. You know, Mason Plumlee's making $8.5 million. In hindsight, that was a bad contract also. I don't think we thought it was bad at the time, but yeah, that's too much for Mason Plumlee.
Yeah. I think the best part of that trade was just moving up, I think 15 spots or 20 spots in the second round and getting JT Thor. So we can always at least look at that. Yeah. So guys that are going to be unrestricted free agents this offseason. We have Yusuf Nurkić. You know, obviously the Blazers are not trying to contend, so soon he will be going somewhere else. Serge Ibaka, Thomas Bryant, Mo Bamba will be restricted free agent, as will DeAndre Ayton. JaVale McGee, unrestricted. Robin Lopez, Gordy Dang, Hassan Whiteside, Andre Drummond, Dwayne Dedman, Tony Bradley, Isaiah Hartenstein, someone to look out for. And Mitchell Robinson is also an unrestricted free agent because he was a second round pick. So they did not fully guarantee DeMarcus Cousins, Luke Kornet, Moses Brown. That is kind of what, and Naz Reid, as far as, you know, the center market.
Lots of options, and we need to mix it up. We need to mix it up with Plumlee. So the other big storyline sort of for this offseason is how much money is Miles Bridges going to get? Similarly with how I was telling like Hornets fans, you know, stop thinking about Borrego getting fired. It's not going to happen. I also think you can stop thinking about, are we going to re-sign Miles? I think the answer is just yes. It would be pretty terrible. Like you draft players to be able to sign them for, you know, in their 20s, in their mid 20s, when they're in their prime. You don't draft players to then just let them walk. So he's going to get money. He's going to get paid. It's unfortunate that we weren't able to re-sign him for less money this past offseason, but he's still going to get paid this offseason. There's rumors of the contract being as much for 5 years, $174 million. And I would do that, Tim. I would do that. Miles Bridges is a beast. We need him on our team. Him and LaMelo have great chemistry. They are friends off the court. He's going to be on our team next year. I don't think there's a chance that we don't re-sign him.
Yeah, I think that the only thing Hornets fans have to worry about, I think worst case scenario, is another team comes in. If we don't just, we should just show some loyalty, sign him to the field, no questions. But worst case scenario, I think for us, you know, we're not going to lose him, but maybe a 3-year deal with a player option, you know, like a 4-year by 3+1 essentially. That's like the worst case scenario to only have him locked up for 3 more years. But yeah, I mean, I would be pretty apoplectic if you lost. Like that would just be, that would be like a major, massive, stupid move.
Yes. Yeah. We're definitely going to try to re-sign him, and it's for good reason. We're going to have to pay him. That sucks, but good for Miles. Good for him getting that money. And he said in his, you know, exit interview, all signs point to he loves playing in Charlotte. He likes the city of Charlotte. He said, I'd love to play with Melo and Terry for the rest of my career, which is, you know, hashtag Hornets culture. Love to see that. And yeah, I think he will be here for at least another, you know, the duration of his next contract. Him and Melo are a great tandem, and he's going to get re-signed. It's just a question of how much is he going to get?
Yeah, I think we need to look forward to, like, you know, 5 years, 170, 5 years, 150, which is crazy to say, too, like, you know, even this time last year, I don't think anyone would see that coming. Miles, invaluable member of the team. And I like that Terry gets slid in there. It's like, I want to play the rest of my career with Terry. And it just makes me think to those Celtics teams. It's like Terry is a well-experienced player of having younger players carry him to massive playoff runs. So, I mean, he's no stranger to this. He's ready to run it back.
Yeah, and I mean, I want to talk a little bit more about the Terry Rozier contract. I think it's a good deal, dude. He's only making $21.5 million next year. He's one of the, you know, like 10 best shooting guards in the league, I would say. He's an elite, you know, level scorer, and he's shown that in the off season he can improve every single year. You know, just like Miles Bridges, Terry Rozier pretty much every single off season comes in the next year a better player. Like the closest thing would be this year to last year, he pretty much was the same. But every other year in his career, he's pretty much just improved. Even going back to his Celtics years, so I expect him to come in a little bit better next season as well. And, you know, he's in his late 20s. I believe he's like 27, I want to say. And, you know, we're going to get him through his like 31 year old season. That's assuming he's not traded, but yeah, it's a good contract. I like that Rozier deal.
It's a good contract. And like, you know, if you're like, maybe if you're one of like the top five contenders and you have like championship aspirations, you look at Terry Rozier and you have some question marks about his defense, playmaking. But if you're like just looking to be like, you know, a fifth seed, Terry Rozier is a pretty perfect player. He doesn't like miss time at all. Shooting normally ages very well. He's a perfect off ball complement to LaMelo. You can point to, will there be defensive limitations with a backcourt of he and LaMelo? Well, yeah, of course. But, you know, as long as you're not looking for a championship, I think that Terry is far above adequate.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm probably a little bit higher on it than you are, Tim. But yeah, I mean, I agree with like the limitations defensively. I just think that he fits in very well in his role with this team. He did not fit in well when he was like, you know, one of the primary ball handlers. But with LaMelo, you know, eating up a lot of the usage, I think Terry Rozier makes sense. He just needs to get buckets and play like adequate defense on the other end. And LaMelo's also, like we've talked about this before, he's tall, dude. Like if he can become a good defender, which I think he can, then that would sort of make up for Terry Rozier's limitations on that end.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're like, I don't really think that there are that many teams that like, I'm a believer in defensive big, you're like big men in general should be like, you know, the end all be all for your defense. I don't think there's that many defensive units that can be like derailed by a bad shooting guard on defense. Yeah. Like it's not that like, okay, cool. They get picked on pick and roll six times throughout the game. Yeah. It's like, all right. Yeah. It's like, you know, 10% of possessions, not really worried about it.
Yep. Yep. No, I agree. One other thing to watch out for is like, how much money is Cody Martin going to get? How much money is Montrezl Harrell going to get? Are we going to re-sign IT? I think Nick Richards, he's got a team option for the next year. I think we might have seen Nick Richards' last game in a Hornets uniform because we've mentioned before, like the limitations with roster spots. I'm not sure he's going to make the cut. I don't think we're going to re-sign Trez either, just because of like the money aspect. How much money is he going to make, and how much money are we willing to pay a backup center? It'll be interesting to see what happens with Cody Martin and how much he's going to get paid in free agency. And I hope we re-sign Isaiah Thomas. I like his fit on the team as kind of a veteran backup point guard.
Yeah, I like Isaiah Thomas as well. And I think a big thing with the Plumlee, Trez, Martin questions for the offseason is like how real was the Kai Jones progression in the G League? Do they think that Book Knight will be able to play 20 minutes a game next year? Like in theory, again, both top 20 picks, you would imagine yes would be the answer. But I think it'll be pretty telling if, you know, we end up matching whatever offer comes their way. And honestly, I'm not really worried about, like, Cody Martin's not going to get a $40 million deal. Mm. You know, like, I don't think whatever his deal will be like will surpass $20 million. He's a fine player, but if you're a playoff team, you probably have other needs that you're like, you're not so desperate for a Cody Martin, even though he's a, quote, winning player.
No, he is a good player. I kind of hope that we don't sign him for the reasons that you said of like allowing Book Knight to play. It's going to be very interesting to see what kind of minutes Book Knight and Kai Jones get next year. You know, Book Knight has a good relationship with the players on the team that are around his age, like LaMelo and Miles. And, you know, so I think they're rooting for him to get some minutes next year. And hopefully he just comes in and is getting minutes right away in the second season. That's a big storyline to watch. I could also see one of them getting traded this offseason. We talked about Gordon Hayward potentially being on the move this offseason. If we're trading Gordon Hayward, we might need to throw in some players to, you know, entice teams to be willing to take on that contract. We might need to throw in a first-round pick or a Book Knight or a Kai Jones.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, even with, like, a disappointing rookie year, I would be kind of hard-pressed to imagine that Book Knight wouldn't be valued at least, like, the 20th pick of this draft.
Yes.
Especially since this is a weaker draft. But, yeah, I guess that's something we'll see. And I'm sure that in Classic Hornets fashion, Cody Martin will walk. He'll be in Phoenix next year. And we'll be so excited. Oh, man, that means the Book Knight's finally going to get to play. And then we'll sign Brad Wanamaker.
Caleb Martin. Caleb Martin getting traded to the Hornets instead of Cody.
Oh, my God. That's yeah, that, that, that's, yeah, don't put that evil on us, Ricky Bobby.
All right, so a heartbreaking episode for y'all. We will step up the energy in our future episodes this offseason. We had to take like a solid 48 hours before we recorded this episode. You might think that we sound sad today, but if you had heard us right after the game, it would have been a terrible listen. So that's why we waited a little bit to record. Cooler heads have prevailed. And still looking forward to the future, but Tim, this sucked.
This absolutely did suck. We're, you know, we'll see how long the play-in is around. I assume they're going to stick with it. But at the very least, the Hornets do own the title of worst play-in team of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. Us and the Spurs have lost both years in the play-in. But the Spurs, you know, at least we're not expected to do anything. We've gotten blown out by 30 points in both of our play-in experiences. Shout out to everyone who supports the podcast through the ups and the downs. Xavier Harvin, TC Cunningham, Brandon Garcia, Austin Johnson, Isaac Black, Dan Joseph, Aaron Barton, and Caitlin Ferland. Thanks to everybody for your support. And, you know, like we said, we're going to have some off-season podcasts. I think our next episode will probably just not talk about the Hornets at all, completely do an NBA playoffs kind of thing. And then we'll start talking about the draft and stuff like that moving forward.
Yep, we are coming with some heater takes for the playoff preview. Very excited about that. And at the very least, we can raise a glass and toast to an all-around really enjoyable Hornets season.
All right, Tim, it's been real, bro.
All right, it's been real, Liquor Mark. Be safe out there.
Peace.
Peace.